question that we have in the Torah, a very, very basic machokas rishonim, and the issue is what exactly is behind the machokas that we saw Rashi, Nibur Hamaschil, the Ego Matzila Adure, Amai Chayev, that if we're dealing with the case where one party sticks a piece of food, which happens to be truma, into someone else's throat so deep that he can't regurgitate it, he can't get it out. So Rashi says, Amai Chayev Misa Onesu, that the issue over here is why is there Misa on the table? This person has no alternative but to swallow the food. If you have no alternative but to swallow the food, then why call you someone who is eating? In other words, Ones is not considered to be your action. And so why, Rashi says, why are you Chayev Misa? It appears that the Ones is not an issue in terms of the Chiyuv Mamon. And the Chiyuv Mamon that we are speaking about over here in this context is that of Hanoas Me'av, the previous Rashi. So it appears, according to Rashi, that were a person to be Nehene Ba'ones, he would be Chayev. That Ones would only remove the punishment of Misa. It would not remove the punishment of Nehene, of paying for that which you enjoy. On the other hand, the Shita that I think that we would find be more comfortable with is found in Rabbeinu Tam. In the Tosus Yeshanim, at the end of Tosus Rimasa Lo Tzricha, there's a bracket, where Rabbeinu Tam Piresh Kevon Shuba Makom Dlo Matzi Lahadure Ele De Hadachak. The Rabbeinu Tam goes to the next stage of the Gemara, Kvar Nehene Grono Uboin Pi Echad. Right, that the Gemara points out that we have this Kamei Midravmine of Nechunya Ben Hakana. But Rabbeinu Tam asks, V'yim Tomar, Hech Yischayev Mamon Kevon Shetachav Lo Ba'ones, assuming the Ukimta of Rashi, that this person was not interested in this food being pushed down his throat, why in the world should he be Chayev? So Rabbi Notam answers, Kevon Dematzi La'adure Detchak, in the case where he could regurgitate it, V'lo Hadaran, he makes a conscious choice of swallowing it, then Nechalei Bahano Azo. That's not called Ones, when he makes a conscious choice. Mashma, that had we been doing the previous level of the Gemara, when he didn't make a conscious choice, where it was pushed down so far in his throat, he could not regurgitate it. Then in that case, Rabbeinu Tam seems to imply that he would be pater, like B'chol HaTorah Kula. Why in the world should you be Chayev if you are honest? What over here is the machlokas between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam as to whether someone who is Nehene Ba'ones should be Chayev, Rashi, or should be Pator, which again I think is the way most of us would have assumed, according to, which is the Chita of Rabbeinu Tam. As a parenthetical comment, we saw at the end of Tosos Divya Maskil of the I Delo Matzi that there is another Deya that holds like Rabbeinu Tam, the Ritzva, that in the case of Ones, Pator Mimisa Umamon. The reason that we moved to Rabbeinu Tam rather than sticking with the Ritzva is because the Ritzva over there gives a reason. Why are you pater from Mamon? Danan sahade delo nechalei b'achilas iser. That we know people don't like to eat isurim, and here we're dealing with truma. That's not our issue, right? In other words, the p'tur of the Ritzva is not because of the Ones. The p'tur is that this person would not want to eat achilas iser. That's a different issue. We're not speaking about whether it's mutar or it's aser. We're talking about the fact that the etzem, that he has no alternative but to swallow it, that itself is Ones. That itself should pater. So we can't bring any proof from the Ritzvah because he moves over to a totally different reason for the p'tur. But we do have over here l'chora a machlokes Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. So I ask you to please look at the sugya in Baba Kama on daf Chaf Amud Aleph to Chaf Amud Beis, where the Gemara wants to distinguish between, or raises the issue, should we be distinguishing two situations? When we're dealing with the case of Zen Nehene Vize Choser, or we're dealing with the case of Zen Nehene Vize Lo Choser. The Gemara's case, as you saw, is one of an apartment which is being used by which belongs to party A, and it's being used by party B. And the question is, does party B have to pay rent? The Gemara says that in a situation where party A owns the apartment and wants to rent it out, this apartment is his, it's an income generator. And party B doesn't have an apartment. He would normally have to rent an apartment, and he squats in the apartment of party A. Then we have a case of Chotzer Dekayam Ala Agra Vegavra De'Oved LeMegar. In that situation, certainly you're chayav. Zeh nehene v'zeh chaser. That there's no question that B would have to pay rent to A. The question of the Gemara is, what if we're dealing with a person who normally would pay rent, but the apartment is not available for rent? You know, like an apartment here in Yerushalayim that someone from Chutz La'aretz owns. He comes Pesach and Shavuos and Sukkos, or Pesach and Sukkos, and the rest of the year it sits empty. He doesn't want to rent it out. What if someone were to squat in that apartment and leave it in mint condition? There's no chisaron at all. Would he have to pay? Because had he not squatted in that apartment, he would have had to rent an apartment. And so he is being nehene. We have a situation of ze nehene, vize lo chaser. We have a gavra do'avid lemegar. He's nehene. But we have an apartment which is lo avid lo kayema. Le Agra, which was not meant to be rented out. So the Gemara over here has a question. Mai, Matzi Amar Le, Mai Chasarticha. Can the squatter turn to the owner and say, you wouldn't have rented it out anyway. I left it in mint condition. In other words, there, you didn't lose a penny by my being there. Why should I pay you? Odilma Matzi Amar Ha Ishanis. Who cares? In other words, the bottom line is, you were Nen. Pay me for your Hana. That's the question in the Gemara. What over here, how would you define the two sides within the Gemara? What over here is the main question that the Gemara is putting on the table? What is the status of the individual who is nehene? I'm not asking nothing deep. Just how do you understand pshat? What over here is the issue in the Gemara? What over here are the two sides that the Gemara leaves it open? Yes.
We have the owner / producer, and you have the consumer, the person who's benefiting. So you say, do we focus it in a perspective of the owner? Do we say that he's losing something, and therefore he should have to compensate? Or in this case, he's not losing anything, so he shouldn't have to compensate. But if the focus is on whether or not the owner is losing anything or there's a loss of value, or do you say by the beneficiary, if he is benefiting, then he would have, you know, we focus on what the person's benefiting from.
But what's behind the two perspectives? Namely, when you pay for benefiting, what are you paying for? Is it necessarily compensation? That's the issue over here. That's our question over here. When, in other words, when you are mazik, you pay compensation. When you are a gazlan, you're paying compensation. But when you are a nehene, how could we view it? When we say, ein adam nehene min ha'olam hazeh b'lo bracha, are we compensating God for his loss by making a bracha? No, but what is the principle involved? That you're not allowed to use an object belonging to someone else without paying. Irrelevant if he is suffering a loss or not. This is not compensation for a loss. There is a given that you're not allowed to benefit without paying for your benefit. It's built in to the legal system. This is not that you did something wrong. You're not paying because you're guilty. You're paying simply because you were nehene. To the degree that the Gemara at the end of Baba Metzia, Daf Kuf Alhamad Aleph, has a braisa, Itmar hayored letoch sadehu shelo birishus unita'a. I see that you have a garden. And this garden is just waiting to be planted. And so I have a green thumb. I go ahead and I plant your garden without your knowledge. I never ask you, can I do it, etc. And your garden now is beautiful, and you are nehene. So I come to you with a bill that, you know, it's so the owner of the garden will say, I never asked you to do this. I never asked you to do this. I shouldn't have to pay you anything. So the halacha is no, that if you are nehene from that which another person did, you have to pay, not because you asked him, not because of compensation, but simply because he gave you hana'a that you were interested in. Again, if we're talking about a garden that was meant to be planted, so if he gave you that hana'a, you pay for the hana'a, even if he didn't lose a penny, even if he's retired, right? And he has everything that he planted there came from his own garden, right? That he just simply cut off a few branches in his own garden that he would have cut off anyway. He didn't lose a penny. B'chalzot, you pay for benefit. That's one way of viewing it. Namely, the same way, when you rent a car from Avis, why do you pay? You pay because the car is worth less after you drove it. Let's say that the car is worth no less after you drove it. You simply drove from Harnof to the yeshiva. In other words, you hardly used anything. In other words, the gas thing didn't even go down a bit. Nothing changed in the car. You can't say, well, I didn't cause you a loss. Right? You pay for the use of someone's object. It's a given, irrelevant of loss. Or, what's the other alternative?
Viewing gas like a nezek.
That we view it more than a nezek, that, in other words, that you're using my object without paying for it.
Theft.
What?
Theft.
You're stealing from me. You're stealing value from me. But in other words, but that is a question then of chaser. Namely, only if there is a loss can we speak about stealing value. So this person, in other words, do we say that the bottom line is he lived in an apartment rent free? For that you pay. Or do we say, no, you don't pay for benefit per se, you pay for causing someone a loss, for gezel. That over here is the issue. That's over here, the two sides within the Gemara. We paskin, actually we, 90% of Rishonim paskin, ze nehene vezelo chaser is patur. Does that mean necessarily that the issue is one of chisaron? I mean, certainly, if you hold that you pay for loss, and there's no loss, so you're pater. But let's say that you hold, no, you pay for benefit. But b'chol zot, even though you pay for benefit, if there's no loss, you're going to be pater. Why? Not because the mechayiv isn't on the table. You benefited. But what? Yafeh, there's a Pnei Yoshua that says that we have a principle in Pirkei Avos, that kofin al midat sedom, that you're asking someone to pay you when you didn't have a loss, that itself is an improper request. Morally, it's improper on the part of the claimer to claim if he didn't lose anything. But that's a moral issue. If we don't want to use kofin al midat sedom, is there a halachic issue over here? So I sent you to the article or the parish of Rav Soloveitchik on the sugi over there in Baba Kama. He wanted to suggest that to come to court as an interested party, you have to, namely to come as a claimant to court, as a toveya, you have to show what your interest is. The fact that that person benefited, why are you an interested party? He didn't cause you any loss. Only if there was a bit of loss involved can you claim that he owes you something, namely that you have no standing in court against him unless there is some loss. And so over here, it could be that the nehne really is chayev theoretically, but the court would never sit on the case because there's no claimant. What's a claimant going to say? He benefited. Okay, he benefited. But he didn't benefit from you. He didn't cause you any loss. Why are you taking him to court? The question is whether this is what kofen amidat sedom means or this goes beyond kofen amidat sedom. It's only a question of semantics. In any case, we have these two sides in the Gemara. What so one nafkamina is zen nehene v'zelo chaser. Is there me'ikar adin achiyuv of paying for hana'a irrelevant of loss? Or do we say that you only pay when there is a loss, when you're a gazlan, when something is being taken. That has to be compensation. What other nafkamina would there be? What about the reverse case? Namely, let's say I have an apartment in Yerushalayim. I have an apartment in Yerushalayim, but I like to squat in your apartment. Okay, in other words, I'm not gaining anything. I have where to be, but you are losing. Normally, you rent out your apartment. Am I chayef to pay you in a case where I was not nehene, but you were chaser? So if the payment over here is for the chisaron, certainly you pay. If the chiyuv is for hana'a, then l'chora, why should you pay? That's a machlokes between whom and whom? Tosos over there in Baba Kama on one hand, as opposed to all Chachmei Sfarad, the Rif, the Rambam, the Rosh, in his later years, was on of Chachmei. That's what the Gra points out. That's the Rambam I sent you to. So it's a question over here as to who, as to what perspective we are viewing things from, using Yitzchak's language. But the perspective starts off with a question: is there an ekroni chiyuv on nehene irrelevant of loss? The Rav Soloveitchik wanted to point out that not just that from the Rambam's halacha, but even the placement of the halacha sort of would give us a hint as to what direction he is going. Where does the Rambam bring down these halachas of zeh nehene v'zeh lo chaser? In Hilchos Gzela, right? In other words, namely, this is not in Hilchos Schirus. It's not in the laws of renting a car that, well, what happens if you simply took the car without asking, are you chayev, socher shalom idas? No. That would be if you're paying for hanah. This is Hilchos Gzela. It basically comes from the world of loss, and that's the Rambam's psak halacha. What other nafkamina would there be which comes closer to us? What if you are nehene? Dun, 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 dun. What if you are nehene? Again, we have a case of zeh nehene v'zeh lo chaser. Zeh lo nehene v'zeh chaser. L'chora, what's another situation where we would have such a question as to whether you pay for hanoah irrelevant of guilt, or you only pay for hanoah in a situation where you caused a loss? That be, in other words, a little closer to home. What are we dealing with over here in our sugya? No. What machlokas are we trying to explain over here in our sugya between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam? Heard someone say it. Nehene ba'ones. What if you are nehene ba'ones? Someone forces you to be nehene. So if you're chayev for hana'a per se, irrelevant of loss being caused, then l'chora, in a situation where you're forced to be nehene, the bottom line is, you were nehene. The bottom line is that you were nourished by whatever you ate. You ate something, even though you were force-fed, but you were nourished. So you pay for hana'a. In other words, your payment for hana'a is not because you did something wrong. It's not because you caused someone a loss. Your payment for hana'a is because you're in this world, and in this world, when you benefit, you pay. That's the bottom line of this world, that there's always a quid pro quo. There has to be a tit for tat. There has to be a sense of obligation of paying for that which you receive. Masha ein kein, if we say no, you only pay when you do something wrong. You caused him a loss. That's when you pay. Over here, you didn't do anything wrong. You were honest. You didn't. This wasn't your initiative. You didn't do something to hurt someone else. So in that situation, l'chora yipater, namely Rabbi Notam over here would be going in the shita. Sorry, Rashi over here. Rashi by us would be assuming that you pay for benefit per se. You pay for benefit per se. You're paying for benefit per se. Well, according to Rabbeinu Tam, you would only pay. In other words, then would turn out that Rabbeinu Tam over here would not be similar to Tosfos in Bava Kamma. Rabbeinu Tam would be similar to the Rambam, that you pay because you cause a loss. And here you didn't cause anything. Here this was put upon you. This was imposed upon you by another party. You're not at all guilty for the loss of the other party, your anus, So there's no reason for you to pay. L'chora, that would, yes?
I'm trying to understand. The example I gave you before about the garden, so Rambam would say you wouldn't have to pay there?
In the we will, in other words, why, according to the Rambam, in that case would you pay? Only if there was a loss. Only if there was a loss to the gardener.
Then he wouldn't have to pay this.
What?
I mean, if there's a loss in the garden.
You would only pay for Hanoah when there is a loss. In a situation of Zen Nehene Vize Lochaser, you wouldn't pay. Yeah?
Rav Salvatric's explanation that the Sogya Quintozgo is in the world of Sphirus, but doesn't
yes.
he see, I mean, he tries to pair off from the Gemara Bava Metzia about Sheila Shalom Midat by saying that Sphirus is different because it's based on the das of the person who's making the Sphirus. And presumably, isn't it also based on the das of the person that's accepting the schirus? I mean, schirus in general is based on an acceptance of the deal. So how can it be that if it's a case of onus, you would still have to pay?
I'm not working totally with Rav Soloveitchik's framework. In other words, Rav Soloveitchik was the one who compared nehenet to schirus, shalom das. I don't think you have to necessarily view it in that way, but rather simply nehenet per se. Simply, I would rather work off of the Gemara of Yored Tosadei Chavero or the Gemara of Kohanenem and Olam Hazeh Belo Bracha, that for Hanoah, you owe for Hanoah per se, rather than getting involved in Sliris. I agree. Getting involved in Sliris moves us into Sheila, and then you have to make distinctions that don't, that are a little more difficult. But we also had, if you recall, going back to the Tosos, V'idolo ma'imatzi lahadure yamai chayev, Tosos posited that in a situation where someone stole an object, and it's no longer in the world, right? It's no longer in the world, that then the nehene is patur, shekvar hu avud min ha'olam, that if you are nehene from something which the owner would never be able to get to, it's considered to be, let's say, for example, something is in the bottom of the ocean, bezuto shoyam, that no one can get to it, and then you're nehene from it. Somehow you get to that object which is already lost to the owner. So Tosfos posits that in that situation you are patur. What is behind Tosfos? Namely, which of these two approaches are you paying for Hanoah per se or only for Chisaron? For the Chisaron, right. In other words, that would be similar to Rabbeinu Tam, that the Ri and Rabbeinu Tam over here in Ksuvus are working off of the fact that you're only going to be Chayev when there's a Chisaron. When there's a Chisaron, then you're Chayev. If there's no Chisaron, then in that situation, you're going to be Patur. It doesn't mean that we are Mit'alem from Tosfos in Baba Kama. We'll get to that in a minute when the Tosas of Lotzricha. Okay. Okay, can we move to the next Tosas? You wanted to ask something? Yes?
Why is it according to the Rambam's perspective that it's a chesaron mamon is you view it as a punishment if you did something wrong, and therefore if you did it the onus, you'd be potter? In a case of mazik, for instance, we see that once you cause a chesaron mamon, you're chayav, regardless if it was intentional or unintentional. If the cause of the year is the nene, is the chaser part, so okay, you did it by mistake. At the end of the day, you move the chaser and mamon.
Even though in mazik you're correct, adam muad la'olam, but Tosfos over there in Baba Kama says black and white shouldn't be taken literally. In the case of Ones Gamor, you're potter by mazik. Only a situation where there is some degree of negligence. It means that something was done wrong. There was something that was wrong. Tosfos says black and white. No, the Tosfos on Daf. And in the Ketzar Regel over there. He says that in cases of Ones Gamor, and Tosfos says the same thing at the end of Baba Kama, the end of Baba Metzia. There was the moment that it's Ones Gamor, you're potter even by mazik. Okay, so the bottom line of the Gemara is Lo Tzricha de Matzi Aduri Aidei Hadchak, namely within Rashi, within Rabbeinu Tam, we remove the onus. It's not total onus. Were you to want to, you could get rid of it, and you make a conscious decision to swallow it. Then, in that case, you are chayav A on the Hanoah, B you're chayav on the eating of truma, but since the two go hand in hand, so according to Abaye, you're potter for the Hanoah. So Tosfos points out, v'hashta leko lameimar dina hadre, that in the case of hadurei adei adchak, don't think that we tell him, well, why don't you spit it out. Namely, going back to our previous Gemara, that if it was in the upper part of your throat and you could spit it out, then you'd be chayav. Imatzi lahadure hadre, as a gazlan or a mazik. Here there would be no issue of gzela or hezek. Why? De'ein marvichin ba'alim bekach. In the world of gzela and hezek, certainly that is a question of loss. Right? You're only chayev on gzela if you take from someone, you're machaser him, a shavapruta. You're only chayev on mazik if you cause him a loss. In this situation, kfar nimasu, because of the action of the first party who stuck it into your throat, it's already disgusting, and therefore there's no gezel, and there's no mazik. He'll call lecha chiyuv mamon. What is there? Hana. In other words, even though it's disgusting, but you're nourished by it. Elede hana asmeyav. But at what moment is the hana? When you swallow it. At that moment, there's a chiyuv misa, az ba'in ki echad. Va'af agav jechaveiro gozla hoil v'yochol lahachzira, have a kamoshu ben. So now, in other words, we're caught sometime between the devil and deep blue sea. Just a minute. We said that if you're nehene from something which is not in the world, then you're pater. Here, if it's disgusting, isn't this like it's not in the world? So the Gemara says, no. In other words, we have over here a situation where on one hand it's still in the world because theoretically it could be regurgitated, harei be'en, and therefore you're chayev on the hana. However, there's no gzela because it would be worthless. Namely, we distinguish between mazik and gezel. Then we look at the object the way it is currently, and hana, we say that since theoretically it could be returned, even though it would be worthless, still you're chayev on the level of hana'a. Then Tosus was bothered just a minute when you're dealing with objects that are regurgitated, as to whether they're worth something or not depends as to someone's knowledge. Do we know it was regurgitated? Shelo b'fanav mechzichazi. If someone is unaware of the history of this object, it looks perfectly fine. You put a hard candy in your mouth. The fact that you spit it out, you could wrap it. No one will know that it was, not suggesting it to anyone. No one will know that it had been in your mouth. It's like some, in other words, some situation comedy. No one's going to be aware that it's in your mouth. Imkeni havi mahadar la hachazia. So why do we say this is worthless? So Tosa sets up the Zukimta. Meikara lo havi baki im shavapruta. It was very small to begin with. Oh, ma'ati osir. It was almost worthless. And now the fact that it was already, the candy opening was already open. In other words, it looks like it was used. Niskalki lo ktat, eino shavapruta. So we're back to our other, in other words, we keep going back and forth. Okay, let's set up at the Zukimta. It's almost worthless. And now that I put it in my mouth, even though, in other words, people won't realize exactly where it was, but now it's really kain worthless, almost worthless. It's less than a sheva pruta. So then we're back to our question. So why pay for hana'a? Zeh nehene v'zeh lo chaser. V'afilu I zeh nehene v'zeh lo chaser. Pater says Tosfos, mikoma kom kevon deshavin kol shehu, oz mechayev bakol. Tosfos gives a principle. That if, let's say, I had hana'a of $1,000 and I cause a chisaron of 15 cents, how much do I owe? According to Tosfos, $1,000, right? In other words, the Tosfos says the moment that we have any amount of value which is lost, then we throw the book at the individual and he has to pay for all of his hana'a. Mishum do amarei at garamt li hakefa yetirta mechayev b'chol hana. That in the case over there, Baba Kama, where there were three walls that didn't give hana'a, but the moment that the fourth wall gave a bit of hana'a, then the person inside has to pay for all four walls. O mishum shachurisa de ashisa, then mechayev l'kulei alma b'chol. L'kulei alma, this is according to Tosfos. Not everyone agrees with this. But according to Tosfos, if let's say you're in a house, that case of the squatting, right, that you squatted in someone's house who wasn't planning on renting it out, and you return it in less than mint condition. Namely, normally you would pay for rent of an apartment in Yerushalayim $1,000 a month. You squatted in his house for 3 months. $3,000 is the hanoah that you received. But during those 3 months, the walls got a little scratched. Namely, to fix up the walls would cost $100. So we say, you don't just pay $100, you pay $3,000. The moment that we have a case of zeh nehene v'zeh chaser, Even a small amount, you pay for the hanoah. So therefore, in our situation, we're dealing with a case where the object that you're eating gives you nourishment. And you caused a slight bit of loss, a little bit of loss, even less than a sheva pruta. You now have to pay for the nourishment. What's going on over here? Where does this fit into our picture? Where is this Tosfos coming from? Would everyone agree with this? We had a hakira. What do you pay for? Do you pay for hanoah or do you pay for loss? So Tosfos says we're dealing with the mando amar of zenehene v'zelo chaser, that you're patur. But if you're chaser a little bit, not only you chayv, are going to throw the book at you. According to whom does this fit in? Let's take our sides. If basically you're paying for chisaron, you pay for loss, and you're nehena $3,000, and there's a loss of $100, how much should you pay?
$100,
right? That's not Tosfos. Tosfos is assuming basically you pay for hana'ah. If you pay for hana'ah, so we ask the question, why do we paskin zen and evzel ochaser is potter? Ah, you're paying for hana'ah, and you're getting hana'ah. So how did we explain it? That what will the court say to the person who's claiming? What are you claiming? You have no business over here. He was nehenet. You didn't lose anything. What are you claiming? But the moment he lost $100, then what does he come to the court and say? I'm a claimant. I belong here in court. Once he belongs in court, then how much does the nen have to pay? All the hanah. Namely, the only reason that the nehenet was off the hook was because the person from whom he was nehenet had no claim. The moment that there is a claim, then we go back to our principles. The principle is you pay for hanah. Now, Tosfos over here is working parallel to Tosfos in Baba Kama, parallel to what we have over here in Rashi, that you pay for hanah. So we have over here on the page, we have the Ri and Rabbeinu Tam who are taking the side of the Rambam. We have Rashi and we have the Stam Tosos over here, Lo Tzricha, which is parallel to Tosos and Baba Kama, that we have these two options of how to view these issues. That according to the Rambam, if you are nehene $3,000 and you cause a loss of $100, you pay $100. That according to the Tosos and Baba Kama, in such a situation, as Tosos points out over here, you pay $3,000.
You see, at the beginning of this Tosfos, the fact that Tosfos is concerned that the item that was being eaten should be worth at least something, because otherwise it would be avud min ha'olam, doesn't that imply, or that it could still be regurgitated and be worth something, doesn't that imply that this Tosfos also holds like the Ri from before?
I was thinking about that. One can distinguish between the different levels within Tosfos. In other words, Tosfos starts off like a continuity of the previous Tosfos. Then when he asks the question from Chulin, that's already a new schnitt. In other words, in which he's dealing with a different set of principles. Okay? Yeah?
It seems very duchic. Why should the principle of Zenen of Zelo Chaser, if we're arguing from the perspective of it's Nehene, why should that be different? Why should Beistin view it differently than the principle itself? Because essentially what we're saying is, Beistin is saying that we're not looking at it from the perspective of Nen, and we're looking at it from the perspective of Pisaron, and therefore, when you come to court, what are you claiming for? It just seems like they're not on the same page.
No, in other words, there are two issues over here. One is, how do we define a Baal Dovar? Who has the right to bring a court into a case? In other words, if I see, across the street from me, that Reuven punches Shimon in the nose. Okay? I can't take Reuven to court for punching Shimon in the nose. Shimon has to take Reuven to court for punching him in the nose. And if Shimon doesn't mind, so Shimon doesn't mind. He's not pressing charges. Right? And who hadin? In other words, so if I view that this person was nehene, that's not enough for me to take him to court. I have to be a party to the issue. So when am I a party to the issue? If I'm involved in some way monetarily, I'm a party to the issue. If let's say I were to tell Shimon's about to squat in my house. Okay, I'm in America. I get this email from Shimon. Your house is available for me. I plan to squat there. And before he squats there, I send him an email. Don't you dare squat there. You should know I'm makdid. I don't want anyone in my house. And he goes ahead and squats there. I can go to court. I'm already a bal dover. Namely, I already told him that my property was meant for me. I'm not mochel. I'm going to be kofel midat stone. In other words, v'chule. So then I can take him to court, but I can't come afterwards and claim that this bothered me unless there was some loss. In other words, I can either come to court because I originally told Shimon I'm going to take you to court if you go into my apartment, or because he causes me a loss. I can't come afterwards if there was no loss and claim you shouldn't have been there. That's one issue. But what would Shimon be paying for? So then, according to Rashi by us, and according to Tosfos and Bava Kamma, he'd be paying for the hanoah, not for the loss.
Why is he paying that person specifically? He could be paying, giving his tzedakah. Like, why? That person isn't a bal dover, so therefore, why does he have to pay him?
He used that person's object. He was neheneh from that person's object. When he was neheneh,
so therefore he shouldn't receive anything.
Again, the moment he is a baal davar, then he receives. If he's not a baal davar, he can't receive. You know, at the moment the court is going to deal with it, it means that there's a baal davar. It means that there's a plaintiff as well as a defendant. The moment there's a plaintiff, then the defendant will pay the plaintiff. But there has to be a reason for him to come to court. That reason can be I lost something. That reason can be I informed this individual that I am a makpid, that I am, you know, is that I am different than everyone else in the world. Everyone else in the world is mochel. I'm not mochel. I informed him. And so I'm a baal davar. Yes?
After the Gemara in Kuhin, does Tosfos still hold that the reason why you're pater in the case of where your friend pushes it into your mouth past the point of no return, so to speak, that the reason why you're pater is because you're not causing any value loss?
The reason that your potter, according to the maskana of the Gemara, is because of Rav Nechunya ben Hakana, that we have simultaneously a degree of hana'a and misas bezdin. And whenever we have misas bezdin and mamon, then the misas bezdin overrides the mamon.
So you would be chayav even in the case of lo matzila dura?
No. Only in a case of matzi l'adure de adchak.
Right, so in the case of lo matzi l'adure.
In the case of lo matzi l'adure, so there we saw two different reasons why you would be pater. According to Rashi, you're pater because there's no chi of misa. And according to the Ri, you're pater because there's no chi of mamon. Those are two different reasons. Going to the Ritzvah, you're chayiv because there's no chi of misa nor chi of mamon. And then we have to ask ourselves why. Why is there no chi of misa? Onus. Then you have to set it up as a case of onus. We didn't want to set it up as a case of onus. So why you pater? Because there's no chi of mamon, because it's eino ba'olam. The Ritzvah says it's a case of onus. You're pater from misa, and you're pater from mamon because you didn't want to eat isurim. Everyone has his own reasoning for that previous state in the Gemara.
But if the Gemara in Kulin is saying that there's still some value after the point of Lo Matzila Dure, then isn't it still Baal Olam?
That's not Gemara in Kulin, that's Tosus. The Gemara in Kulin says that something having value is totally subjective as to whether someone knows the history of this object, then it goes down to be valueless. Someone doesn't know the history, the value is going to go down, but it's not going to be valueless. Tosa sets it up as an ukimta, where originally it was just a little bit above Sheva Pruta, and now it goes down to below Sheva Pruta. So on the level of Gezel and Mazik, since now it's less than Sheva Pruta, nothing to talk about. On the level of Hana'a, since we have a din that when you have a slight loss, even less than a Sheva Pruta, then you're going to have to pay for the entire Hana'a, then the Hana'a comes back into the picture.
But you wouldn't say that by Lo Matzila Dure?
No. In a case of lo matzi lahadure, there's nothing to talk about. Lo matzi lahadure means that it's irrelevant in the eyes. You can't regurgitate it. So the whole question of merci chazi, lo merci chazi, does someone know the history or not know the history, is something that was regurgitated. If it was not regurgitated, then it's eino ba'olam, according to the previous Tosfos. Okay. That's what we have over here within this. And then the end of Tosfos simply points out that it's not totally, according to the Ritzvah, we have over here we could set it up as a case where the chi of mamon is going to be gezel or mazik, and becholzot you're going to be potter because of Rav Nechunya ben Hakana. We're dealing with different stages. Since they're so close to one another, even in other words, since they're so close to one another, that's considered to be bevasachas. That's, you know, it's you know, an issue that we dealt with previously before Sukkos. That's what Yomo raised in terms of when two things are almost the same time, but they're not exactly the same time. When, you know, it's, do we view them as simultaneous or not? That's in other words, over here the Ritzvah says that simultaneity does not mean totally bevasachas, but just very, very close to one another. Okay, I have no hesber. I have nothing to add. Just he says it, and he brings the Chora a proof from a Gemara in Yevamos that deals with a situation of where a mum and tuma come about simultaneously, but it's really not simultaneous because first the tuma comes, first the knife touches his body, and then he becomes a baal mum. But we view it as being simultaneous. So we see that simultaneity is lav dafka, could be a process that are very, very close to one another.
Okay. Are there the other Rishonim that disagree with that?
Everyone else disagrees with that.
Oh, okay.
In other words, it's only the Ritzvah who says it. The Ritzvah, again, was bothered by this whole issue. Is this object that is now regurgitable, is it worth something or not worth something? You want to say, well, it's subjective, it depends, people know it. Ritzvah says, even if we assume that it is worth something, but since he swallowed it immediately, then we view it as the simultaneity.
So how would the Gemara be explained, the Gemara in
Yevamos? The Gemara in Yevamos is not talking about Kama Midrabba Minei. It's not talking over there. It's not our sugya. No, it's our sugya says that when we have an onesh misa, or misa bidei shamayim, and mamon that are simultaneous, that the maisa which is done can only be mechayev the davar chamor and not the davar kal. But that there, the sugya over there isn't talking about that at all. The sugya over there is talking about baal mum sheshimesh betumah, that we have two isurim. I'm mistaken. Neither of them. Sugi over there. There, the sugi is dealing with an issue of whether we say iser chalal iser, whether we can have if already we have an iser on the table, whether we can add another iser on top of that. Simply in terms of whether the person would be over one iser or two iser. If we have nevela and now it's Yom Kippur and I eat the nevela and Yom Kippur, can we speak about Yom Kippur entering into the picture if we already have a pre-existing iser? So generally, we have a rule that ain't iser chal iser, but if they're both chal bevat achat, if they both come simultaneously, then they're both chal. And then it also uses the concept of bevat achat, but who says that the bevat achat of ain iser chal iser is parallel to the bevat achat of coming midrabba minei? Maybe that over there you don't necessarily need a total simultaneity, and here yes. I don't know. In any case, It's not as though we have a case of Kamei Drabinei that has to be explained. It's not a case of Kamei Drabinei. It's a case of Iser Chalal Iser. That we have Avoda Betuma, and we have an Iser of Avoda as a Baal Mum. So normally we would say, if already the person is Tamei, then we're not going to enter into the issue of Baal Mum. It's not a question of one being more Chamor, one being more Kal. It's simply a question as to whether the two of them can be on the table simultaneously. In other words, in our sugya, we're talking about onshin. We're talking about the world of punishment. So they're not talking about the world of punishments. They're talking about the, whether the person was over one isur or two isurim. That's the issue over there.
So we have to assume then that the Rishonim who don't learn the Mechav Ritzvah, it's obvious then there's a chiluk between the two.
Between the two, I think so. Okay. Or the Ritzvah simply assuming Yevshe Shelo Yiga Sakin Kodem Sheyachtoch, that the knife is always going to touch the individual before it's cut. That depends on the sharpness of the knife. It could very well be that a knife which is very, very sharp, the moment it touches, is already going to cause a mum. Now, it could be a question in terms of the metzius of the sakin that they're talking about.
Do they have to pick it up first?
No, we're talking about, in other words, someone else did it. Yeah. Someone else did it to him. Okay, moving further in the Gemara, I looked at the clock, the clock is still daylight savings time, okay. I said, oh my goodness, what did I do to you? Okay. Moving further in the Gemara then raises another Ukimta, Rav Papa Amargon Shetachav Lo Chavero Mashkin Shel Truma Letoch Piv. With the Mashkin Shel Truma, we already have an act that the Chavir causes this to be worthless the moment it enters into the person's mouth. There's no gezel, there's no mazik on the part of the second party, but when he swallows it, we're going to have an issue of hanoah. Namely, simply to take away the issues that we dealt with earlier in terms of something still being valuable, being able to be spit out in the world of mashkin, all of that falls off. But what we're concerned is the third ukimta, that of Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi, again, searching for a simultaneity and finding a difficulty in finding a simultaneity between the mamanos of the eating of truma and the misa of the eating of truma, that the mamanos generally precedes the misa. The misa is only in the swallowing, and the mamanos can be the time it enters into his mouth, when he picks it up, puts it into his mouth, chews it, is able to regurgitate it, all of those we have that precede the misa. So Rav Ashi says, no, the mamanos over here is coming from left field. Bizar sha'achal truma mishalo. In other words, that there's no mamanos on the eating of the truma. The truma belongs to him. He inherited it from his father-in-law, who was a kohen. This has nothing to do. This has nothing to do with mamanos. The truma only brings about the misa bidei shamayim. He's a zar. That's what causes the problem of truma. But the truma is his. However, kara shiroim shel chavero, as he is swallowing the truma, 1, 2, 3, swallow, at the point of 3, he also is mazik, the beged of a third party. So we have over here, simultaneously, achiyav amisa b'dei shamayim via the swallowing, and achiyav of mamanos by tearing someone's garment. But not within the world of truma. The truma simply brings about the misa. But simultaneously, he happens to be doing an act of karashirayim. As Rashi points out, b'shara b'shara shebola, va'afagav de misa lav mishum mamona de nizok asyale miftar. Who cares that we're dealing over here with two totally separate actions? The fact that they're simultaneous, we apply the principle of kamei b'dravine, Rav Nechunya ben Hakana. However, we just have to add in usvira leila Rav Ashi misa laze v'tashlumin laze patur. That the fact that the chi of misa is relating to one action, namely eating truma, and the fact that the tashlumin relates to a totally different action of being mazik chavero, we still apply the rule of kamei b'dravine. Why does Rashi go ahead and say this? I mean, who forced Rashi to say this? Who says that misa laze v'tashlumin laze is chayav? The Rashi has to tell us that Rav Ashi holds its pater. No, what did you see in Tosfos? We have Rava in Sanhedrin. Right, look at Tosfos. Rav Ashi Amar bezor shachal truma mishalo v'kara shirayim. Pirish hakuntrus. This is Rashi's explanation. The sphere of Rav Ashi, the misa l'tashlumin laze pater, upalig ad Rava. He disagrees with Rava. We have Machokas Amoraim, two very, very late Amoraim, towards the end of the Tkufa of the Amoraim. Rava and Rava Ashi. Dama Perakamba de Sanhedrin, that when we have a case of Edim who come and they say, Ploni bo albas ploni, that we have a Na'ara Hamurasa, we'll call her Jane, right? And they say that Dick came on Jane, that Dick was intimate with Jane, she's a Na'ara Hamurasa. Namely, we have over here, according to these Edim, Achi of Misa, both on Dick and on Jane, Ploni bo albas ploni, vehuzmu. And it turns out they weren't there at all at the time or the place that they claimed that this happened. They're what we call Edim Zomamim. What's the din of Edim Zomamim? Kasher Zomam, Lasos Lachiv, right? That whatever they wanted to bring about as a psak din is going to occur to them. So, Neheragim, they wanted to kill two innocent parties, Dick and Jane. So they begin to get killed. And Mishalmin Mama. And they also, Neheragim u'mishalmin, they also pay. What do they pay? What loss did they want to cause? The ksuva to whom? We're dealing with the Na'ara Hamurasa. To the father. Namely, they wanted to kill Dick, kill Jane, and that Jane's father, in other words, were her husband. She's a Na'ara Hamurasa. She's already married to a third party, to Gershon. So Gershon normally would have had to pay a ksuva if he wanted to terminate the marriage with Jane, and the father would have gotten that ksuva. They wanted to cause the father the loss of this ksuva. So that over here, they're a chayav, a double punishment of Misa, and a chayav of Mama. I call me bidrabine, with one act of Edus, they wanted to bring about a chayav Misa and a chayav Mamon, and now we say that they're going to be Chayav Misa and Mamon. Why don't we say Kol Mi'd Rav Minei? So Rava says, Mamon Lazeh Unafashos Lazeh. Peirush, I'm reading according to the Marasha, Mamon La'av Sheratzu La'Hafsida Ktuvasa Unafashos Lazeh Shomer Sheba Aleha. So Rava says black on white that we don't apply Kol Mi'd Rav Minei in cases where the punishments are separatable, where one punishment goes to because of one party and another punishment because of another party. So we have over here a stira in our sugya. We have over here a stira in our sugya between Rav Ashi and Rava. That Rav Ashi says in our sugya that in a case of Ochel Truma, that were Chayav Misa to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Kara Shira'in, and we're Chayav Mamon to his Chaver. So in this situation, Rav Ashi says that, according to the Rav Ashi says in this situation, Patur Mimam. Right? But Rava says, in a case where we have Edim Zomanim, who wanted to cause Misa to Ploni and Plonis, and he wanted to cause a loss of Mamon to the Aviha of Plonis. So in this situation, Rava says that he's Enu Zomer Mechayev Misa and Mamon. So over here, we see that the Chi of Misa and Pater from Amun. In other words, that we apply the Din of Kamalei Nidirabba Mimei. And Rava says over here, no, that we have Misa Lazer, Umamon Lazer, Chayav. So to get around this Stira, what does Rashi say? Macholkes. This is a Macholkes Amorayim. Right? That Rava would say, even in Rav Ashi's case, that you would be Chayav Mamon. And Rav Ashi would say, even in Rava's case, you'd be Pater from Mamon. We have Machokas Amaroyim. That's the way Rashi deals with this situation. The problem is that had this been the only two sugyos, okay, we could say it's machlokes. But we have many sugyos, and that's why we have over here this long tosos, where it appears that it's very difficult to say we have a machlokes, because we're going to find Rava mentioned in other places as holding what appears to be like Ravashi over here. We're going to have Mishnayos that get in, which we shouldn't have machlokes amoroyim on a Mishnah, etc., etc. So we have over here, so far we have Rashi. He says that this issue of Mamon Lazeh and the Fashos Lazeh, that's a Machlokes Amoraim. What other options are raised? Yes?
Sorry, isn't the Pashup Shad in our Gemara also? Because this whole thing is based on Machlokes and Rav and Abaye. Here we're explaining Abaye, who's against Rav.
Okay. It's very nice, very neat, right? That Rav Ash is explaining Abaye, who happens to be against Rav. And therefore, we can say that maybe there's Machlokes Ekronit, even though Rava is not dealing with coming to Rabbi. According to Rava, Misa Bidei Shemayim, there is no Chiyuv Misa. So it's not as though Rava said, we have a Chiyuv Misa, but you have a Chiyuv. Rava says, there is no Chiyuv Misa. But certainly there's no Stira. In other words, to say that Rav Ashi and Rava disagree within our Sugya is not, there's no issue. The problem is that we have other Sugyas. So before we see Tosus inside, maybe just an overview. What other options are there? We have a black and white Sugya that says Mamon Lazeh Nefash Lazeh is Pater. We have a black and white sugya that says Mamon Lazeh Nefash Lazeh are Chayav. So one option is Machlokes. What's another option? Simply on a priori level. When you have two sugyas that associate one another, one possibility is in Achinam is Machlokes. What's another possibility? Really? One sugya is
it's a different scenario.
The rule, and the other sugya is the exception. But that can go in two directions. Either this is the rule and this is the exception, or this is the rule and this is the exception. Those two we find within Tosfos. One of them we find as being stated by Tosfos without a name, it's Tosfos. And the other one we find being stated by Rabbi Mutam. I'll just say it now outside and then we'll see it inside. Tosfos holds that the rule is that Tosfos says that the rule is chayiv. The rule is chayiv. Mamon lazeh nefashos lazeh chayiv. Like Rava pointed out, that's the rule. And our Gemara will be an exception. Our Gemara will be an exception. Why should our Gemara be an exception? We'll come to. Rabbi Nutam says that the rule is Mamon lazeh unefashos lazeh is pator. Our Gemara is the rule, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin is the exception. Those are the three options that we have over here in Tosfos. And the beauty of this Tosfos in terms of its length is that we don't have to look at other Rishonim because almost everything is in Tosfos. Namely, if you look at the Ramban, you'll find it in Tosfos. The Rashba, you'll find it in Tosfos. The Meiri, you find it in Tosfos. Assembly. The other Rishonim are basically permutations of what we find within our Tosfos. Okay, so now let's try and understand what is going on over here. To say that our Gemara is the rule, I'm sorry, to say that the Gemara, Tosfos holds the Gemara in Sanhedrin is the rule. Mamon lazeh nefashos lazeh chayav. This is Rava in Sanhedrin. That Rava is the rule, and Rav Ashi is an exception. Let's look at our Tosfos. That's before we see the case that the Tosfos feels he has to explain. Let's look on the second line in Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. Tosfos points out, Ela al korcha chashiv misa v'tashlumin le'echad, ho'il, this applies to our Gemara as well, v'lo mechayiv misa b'shvil adam, ela l'shamayim. Vachinami, in our Gemara itself, Achilas Truma v'kriya Shirayin have a Misa v'tashlumin le'echad. Again, according to Tosfos, whenever we have two parties, here we have Ploni and Plonus and we have the father, then we say Chayev. In this situation, we say Chayev. However, when they merged into one party, then you're Pater. What does Tosfos tell us about the case of Rav Ashi? How do we view this, as two parties or one party? What is Tosfos saying?
One party.
Why do we view this as one party? We have God and we have George. Why view God and George as one party? That's what Tosfos says, 100%, right? When we have two parties, we have over here, this Pliny Ponus is one party, and the father is another party. Those are two parties. Those split the punishments. Everyone gets his own punishment. Misa lazeh, maman lazeh, chay. When we have one party, then you're pater. What Tosfos says is that that's the rule. Sanhedrin is the rule. Our Gemara is the exception. Why?
It's like the case of the Gedish, where when Hashem is involved, we sort of lump the person with Hashem.
Namely, that every Aveira ben Adam lechaveira is also an Aveira ben Adam lamaka. Right? I mean, with all the Hashkafa that you learned in terms of Aseres Hadibros, right? You have five ben Adam lamaka. No, it's all ben Adam lamaka. Ben Adam lamaka has different ramifications. But you can't speak about HaKadosh Baruch Hu being a separate party from George. George, when you injure George, you're going against the rules of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So over here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everything. This is viewed all as one party. We don't view this as two parties. You're pater from Mammon, not because Mammon Lazeh Unafashos Lazeh is pater. No, Mammon Lazeh Unafashos Lazeh is Chayev. But this is not Lazeh Ulazeh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings everything together. We have over here one address, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't have over here two different addresses. That's the Shita of the Ri. And we'll see, just one second. Just want to come to Rabbeinu Tam, and then we'll come back to the Ri minute. Rabbeinu Tam starts off the other way. Look at Rabbeinu Tam in the middle of Tosfos. Smack in the middle of the thin lines. V'nira l'Rabbeinu Tam. The Rava Dafkal Gabi Adam Zomamim Isle Mamun Lazanafashal Sazechayev. Mishum de Beinan Shetiskayim Hazama Krapi Kol Echad Ve Echad. Name of the rule is our Gemara. That it's irrelevant whether you have one party, whether you have two parties, you're always Patur. The exception is Adam Zomamim. That there we have a din of Kasher Zomam Lasos Lo Achiv Kenya Yasalo. That every person who was Nifga by an Eid Zomen, has to be able to see his revenge, has to be able to see his Mida Kenegan Mida. So Ploni and Plonis have to see the Eid Zomen die, and the father has to see the Eid Zomen pay the money. That's the exception. It's a din in Eid Zomen. Eid Zomen is a different world. We'll come to it. This is just one tip of the iceberg. And Daf Lamed Beis, Lamed Gimel, we'll come up with Eid Zomen as being a whole world in itself that has its own rules. So the rule, classic rule, coming to Rabbi Minei, that Misa takes away the Chi of Mammon, that doesn't apply to the world of Eidu Zomim. There, every Baal Din has the right to his own Kasher Zomim. And so this one, this Baal Din has the right to see the Eidu Zomim die, this Baal Din has the right to see the Eidu Zomim pay Mammon. But that's the exception. The rule is that even when we have two addresses, five addresses, 10 addresses, we have a ptur from Mammon the moment that we have Misa. Eid Zomim is the exception. Okay, so these are the three basic deos within Tosfos. I'm sorry, you wanted to ask before?
Yes. If the whole reason why we consider one party is because of the Bein Adam L'Chaver or Bein Adam L'Makom construct, well, couldn't you say the same thing by the case of Adam Zomim, that if all Ben Adam L'Chavero is really Ben Adam L'Makom, so it's still one party of the Eden.
No, but over here there is no Ben Adam L'Makom. It's all on the level of Ben Adam L'Chavero. Namely, when we're dealing within Ben Adam L'Chavero, we could speak about two parties. When we're dealing on the level of Ben Adam L'Makom, Ben Adam L'Chavero, this swallows the Ben Adam L'Chavero. That we have, maybe, okay, so let's take a step back and just ask ourselves, what in the world is going on over here? Okay, taking a step back. Why? Why should there be an opinion that the moment that we have two addresses that you're chayev two punishments. That what? Why is that a relevant factor? And on the other hand, why would we have opinion that it's an irrelevant factor? How do we understand the whole din of kamalei d'rabbaminei? What's behind this principle that the moment that there is a lo yiyeh ason, then when there's no misa, then there's mamon. But the moment that yiyeh ason, the moment that there's going to be misa, then mamon is not on the table. How over here are these issues relevant to the world of kamalei d'rabbaminei? Let's take a step back. If you recall, before Sukkos, we had two views of the world of kamalei d'rabbaminei. Can someone summarize those two perspectives that we saw? It's not so much the why as to what we find on the table in kamalei d'rabbaminei. Yes, Aaron?
Either because it's a maisa avera chamura.
We said that the one option is the moment that a person does a maisa avera chamura, then
one is off the smaller punishment.
Then the smaller punishment doesn't get off the ground. Namely, this person, he's a heavyweight boxer. A lightweight can't get into the ring with a heavyweight. The moment that a person is a heavyweight, then the lightweight is not on the same table. He's not a contestant. He's not there at all. The moment this person is chayev misa, we don't deal with chiyuvei mamon klape this particular perpetrator or.
We see that Beitin just doesn't have the authority to.
Right. Now, both punishments are on the table. And if we're going to ask, let's say, Sidei Shamayim, is he chayev both? Yeah, sure, he's chayev to pay money. If we're going to ask if the victim is tofes the money, will he be able to keep it? Yeah, he'll be able to keep it. There's a chayev there. But the problem in Kamay Drabine is one of Bezdin. Bezdin can't enforce a chayev mamon. Bezdin's hands are tied behind their back. They can't enforce a chiyuv mamon when they're dealing with a chiyuv misa. Namely, that we have different courts. We have a court of 23, we have a court of 3. When this person is in front of the court of 23, he's in front of the court of misa, this court of 23 doesn't deal with dinei mamonos. In a chinami, it's chiyuv mamon, but Bezdin can't enforce it. It's a problem over here within Bezdin. We pointed out that out of Bezdin, there would be a chiyuv on the table, estan asra torah chiyuv ba'al imo, if you say today Shamayim, Tfisa, etc. Which approach would give us which opinion? Let's say according to Rashi. According to Rashi, we have a machlokes whether Mamon Lazer or Misa Lazer are Chayav, Rava's opinion, or Patur. If you hold that it is a din that the moment that we have a Chayav Misa on the table, that the mamon doesn't enter into the picture, would you more likely agree with Rav Ashi or with Rava? You would more likely agree with Rav Ashi. Namely, it's an irrelevant factor that mamon lazeh or misa lazeh. This perpetrator is chayav misa. The moment he's chayav misa, he's not chayav mamon. The moment that he's a heavyweight, he's not a lightweight. It's a whole different world. However, if we're going to view it as a din within Bezdin, that Bezdin, who are dealing on a level of Misa, can't deal on the level of Mamon, they can't enforce Mamon, then what could we very likely say? That
in this case, there's a special, you can enforce it.
Why?
Because we have to apply it.
We have over here, leaving aside Eden Zonamin per se, we're not, in other words, again, I don't want to get involved in Rabbeinu Tam, doing about within Rashi. Within Rashi, Rava would say, even in this case, you're chayev.
There's two different sets of tofes.
We have two different court cases. We have one court case on Misa, we have another court case on Mamon. These are two different tofes. We're dealing not on the level of the perpetrator, we're dealing on the level of the victims. We have two different victims. Kiviyachla Kodesh Baruch Hu is one victim. Kiviyachol George is the second victim. Each of them can claim his own. Bezdin will deal with this. Bezdin will deal with that. Okay. Now, it's again, according to that, with the easiest way of understanding over here is that we have a machlokes amoraim on the nature of kamei midrabbaminei. Is it that an avera chamur doesn't allow an avera kala to enter into the picture? Then the fact that we have lazev lazeh is irrelevant. If it's a din within Bezdin, then the lazev lazeh becomes all of a sudden relevant. That would be within Rashi. Tosfos we pointed out, has a rule that generally we view it as a din that of working within the same framework of Beis Din. So generally, when we have two different plaintiffs, these are two different court cases. But how do we view this situation when God is in the picture? It's not two different plaintiffs. In other words, that over here, God is also together with Ploni. it's all going to be one plaintiff. That's what Tosis points out. In the moment that God is in the picture, we're going to view it all as one plaintiff. We can't view Ploni and Plonius and Aviha as one plaintiff. These are two different court cases, two different issues. But when we're dealing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and George, then it all merges, according to Tosfos. According to Rabbeinu Tam, we normally have a rule that an Aveira Chamura doesn't allow an Aveira Kala to enter into the picture. But Eid Zomim is an exception. Eid Zomim has its own rules. The whole world of Koma Midrami doesn't apply to Eid Zomim. That's what Rabbeinu Tam says. That over here, this is not Koma Midrami. It's a separate parsha, Kasher Zomim, Kege Yaseh, one Chiyuv, two Chiyuvim, five Chiyuvim. Eid Zomim, you throw the book at the person, it's going to be Chaya for each one of these separately. So this is what we're dealing with as an overview within Tosfos. B'li Neder, next time we'll start simply going through the cases that Tosfos raises. So we'll maybe just end off with the first case. The first case is a Mishnah of Hamadlik Godish B'Shabbos, namely that you on Shabbos burn down someone's barn, which is full of straw. So A, you're chayav for mavir on Shabbos. The punishment for that is misa, right? And you're chayav for burning down a barn. That's mazik. You're chayav mama. What does the Mishnah say? Potter. You're potter from the mama. We apply kavlei midurabamine. Does this fit in according to Rabbeinu Tam?
Yeah.
Beautifully. Yeah, the rule is potter. That's the rule. Only Eid Zomim is the exception. Does it fit in according to Tosfos? Yeah, because the rule is chayav when we're dealing with ploni and ploni. But here, mavir is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Korah Shirayim and the Gadish, the barn, is George. So we pointed out that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in the picture, this is not Maman Lazev and Afashos Lazev. We have one plaintiff, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes over the entire kin and kaboodle. So this is fine according to Rabbeinu Tam. It's fine according to Tosfos. Our problem is Rashi. How can we have Rava disagreeing with a Mishnah? We have a Mishnah that says Potter, and we have Rava saying Chaya. Rava can disagree with Ravashi, and Ravashi can disagree with Rava. But how can Rava disagree with the Mishnah? So here we'll see that the Ri, who we haven't brought in yet, right? We spoke about Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam, and Rashi, will come to the rescue and will give a teretz for Rashi. But in the meantime, this is what we have, in other words, and then we're going through another case, in other words, simply to see how it fits in to these. These are the three frameworks that we're going to see within Tosfos overall. And we're going to have to give a knesh to them in order to be able to fit them into all the cases. Okay? So believe that next time we'll start with this Tosfos, and then we'll move over in the Gemara to the next sugya. The next sugya deals with the world of Akira. Ask you to pass these out. Sara Kanocha, those who learned last year the Dinam of Hotsa, hopefully it will be a nice chazara. I sent you to read through the, half of an Amud, just to see the Gemara and Rashi, but we're going to totally center in on the, if we have time, the second Tosfos, Tosfos Maskel Akira Sorech Hanacha, where Tosfos raises that we have a contradiction, a stira, within two Amoraim, and we'll have a similar issue, right? Do we have Machokas Amoraim? Is one correct? The other one correct? Can we distinguish, etc.? So over here we have Tosus by us, Akira. There's a parallel Tosus in Baba Kama Daf Ayin Amud Beis, and then there's a Rambam. And on this Rambam, there's a Reb Chaim that Mipi Hashmua that I noticed that it for you. And to understand the nature of the Reb Chaim, I sent you to two Rishonim in Hilchot Shabbos, Baal HaMor and the Ran, who to a certain degree represent the Ruba, the Ruba of Rishonim. And then to see other possibilities of how to deal with our issue, I sent you the Shita Mekubetzas. There are three paragraphs there, one right after the other. One deals with Tosas HaRosh, second Rav Yeshaya, and the third the Me'iri. That I don't know if we'll do all of this on Wednesday, but this is the next sugya that we'll be dealing with. Okay, so what we'll do is we already have, I think, over here the basic framework, and also we spoke about that which is behind the framework. What we'll have to do is simply go through the details next time, and then move over to the next sugya of Akira and Hanacha. Okay, this is it.